This is the beginning of Cosmic Fire Webinar Commentaries 9B. We're on page 1218, and we're talking about the laws of group work or the laws of the soul. And I ran over in my last program just a little bit, got caught up in the subject. And we were talking about how all of these actions, sacrifice, service, magnetism, group progress, divine repulsion, which have been the themes of the first five laws of the soul, all bring about a great consummation in the life of the one in whom we live and move and have our being. I wonder, one in whom we. Yeah, there we go. I didn't want to write that whole thing out, but we can do it this way. One in whom we live and move and have our being. Imagine having to write that out every time. That's why these autocorrect abbreviations are so very efficient in the long run, provided you're dealing with a subject in which certain terms are constantly repeated. So we've done or looked through the first five laws. This might be expressed in more material terms by saying that through the dominance of these laws of the soul, he calls them that right now, they're oftentimes called the laws of group work, through the dominance of these laws of the soul, the logoic physical body will become an active expression of his self-realized purpose. And by physical body, we probably include the logoic etheric body, the cosmic ethers, because some of these laws are, after all, originating within the logoic etheric body, within the Buddhic, Atmic planes, and also in the spiritual triad, the mental part of it, which is not really in the etheric body of the solar logos, but is at least an aspect of the necessary discrimination. It's an aspect of the spiritual triad. So there's a big... these laws of the soul are driving towards the sacredness. These laws of the soul are driving towards the sacredness of our solar logos, who is not yet a sacred solar logos from the cosmic perspective. And this, you know, the solar system has to become sacred, and the physical body, the physical etheric body of the solar logos is the solar system. The final two laws concerning group activity can only be very briefly treated. It's always the final two that are the most esoteric. You know, when you look at the planes, it's the five from below to above, which are the planes of Brahma, and they're not really considered to be sacred planes. And the upper two, let's say the monadic and the logoic plane, they're considered to be sacred or occult or esoteric planes. So it's five plus one plus one. And we're dealing now with the two laws that correspond to the plus one plus one. These final, but not that that's exactly where they're found on the planes, but you get the numerical idea. The final two laws concerning group activity can only be very briefly treated, and their true significance is only apparent to pledged disciples. And I suppose truly pledged disciples will have passed the first degree. Have passed the first degree. They concern primarily the astral and mental planes, and therefore correspond, and the corresponding vehicles of the group units. Well, that's interesting. I'm not sure that this was a given piece of information in esoteric psychology too. A group, it should be remembered, which is functioning on the physical plane, is also found in a still larger form on the astral and mental plane. So if we're attempting to, you know, work at the externalization of the schools. Let's see, externalization. Well, okay. Of the schools, new esoteric schools, there are larger astral and mental groups doing the same. Just as the astral body is larger than his physical body and therefore has built into it its structure a larger number of atomic units, that's interesting, a larger number of atomic units, so the group contains, astrally considered, more units than on the physical plane, and I suppose they are working, we might say, working in the discarnate state. Yeah. The laws we are touching upon concern the relation of the physical plane units to those units who form part of the group and yet are functioning without the physical plane sheaths or vehicles. Yes, this is discussed maybe in quite an occult way here, and he basically does not give a lot of attention in esoteric psychology to these laws, nor does he give this kind of occult understanding about the units which are involved. The same idea must be applied to the units devoid of a physical vehicle who form a component part of the mental body of the group. So we have the law of expansive response and the law of the lower four. And I wonder if the first one is connected to the astral body, maybe, and the second to the mental body. So the laws we are touching upon concern the relation of the physical plane units who form a part of the group and yet are functioning without physical plane sheaths and maybe some without astral sheaths also. These two laws are termed the law of expansive response. As I recall, you know, it has a Ray 3 association. And this law of the lower four has a Ray 5 association. But involves all four rays of attribute. All right. These laws only become operative in units on the physical plane which are becoming responsive consciously to those group workers who are discarnate. Yeah, this is not discussed. I suppose the Tibetan has such a memory that when he says something once, he's not going to repeat himself, especially excessively, the way I do. So you'll be able to find it through the CD-ROM or through indexes and so forth. So the law of expansive response and the law of the lower four are only really affecting physical plane units who are responsive to the inner groups. So these laws affect physical plane units who are responsive to the inner groups. Okay. All these laws, and, well, we're just not going to discuss them very much, are we? All these laws, from the point of view of a disciple, need only be considered as operative in the three worlds, though it is needless to point out that parallels will be found on all planes. So from the point of view of the disciple, need to be considered as operative in the three worlds, though there will be originating streams of energy from other and higher worlds, and maybe applications on other levels. The seven laws are those which are ascertained and consciously studied in all groups working under the masters. So hence the importance of studying the laws of the soul. And, you know, I wonder if it would pay to go here just for a tiny treatment, Law of Expansive Response. There's only three references. It tells us a little. It's connected with higher mind. Interesting how, well, we really have to study this, of course. The Law of Repulse is connected with Atma, the Law of Group Progress with Buddha, and the Law of Expansive Response with higher spiritual manas. It comes via the knowledge petals and the subsidiary what? Subsidiary law of service. Aha, so he's connected them, the Law of Repulse to the Law of Sacrifice, the Law of Group Progress to the Law of Magnetic Impulse, and the Law of Expansive Response, which is the sixth law, to the Law of Service. All right, this makes sense. And I forgot to mention that the Law of Group Progress comes in under the seventh ray, interestingly enough, which Capricorn distributes more so than any other ray at this time, and more than any other sign distributes the seventh ray. And this Law of Repulse coming in under the first ray is related to the fourth, and in the Group Progress, the seventh ray is related to the second, and in the Law of Expansive Response, the third ray will be related to the sixth. These are interesting ray relations and have to be looked into. So I'm going to just put this here just for fun. Oh, heavens. Don't you see that unless it's much smaller, it's just not going to have any kind of integrity. So we'll try to make it this way and see if that helps at all. Law of Repulse, Atma, spiritual will. This fourth influence comes via the egoic petals of sacrifice and the subsidiary law of sacrifice. Okay. Well, it makes me want to go in immediately and study the laws as they are presented in esoteric psychology, too, because a much fuller treatment is given. The Law of Group Progress, Buddhi, Spiritual Love, this fifth law comes in via the love petals, comes via the love petals of the egoic lotus, and the subsidiary law of magnetic impulse. At least he talks about what is subsidiary and what is not. The Law of Expansive Response, Manas, higher spiritual mind, the sixth law, it comes via the knowledge petals and the subsidiary law of service. And I wonder if we would gain something. The Law of Expansive Response, it's very short, and I think we could stand to read it, you know. I'd like to incorporate it here within the text so that I can do something about that. This is the Law of Expansive Response. And it's a high law, but, you know, interesting thing is it doesn't have a whole lot to do with the highest aspect of the spiritual triad. Rather, it's connected with the lowest aspect of the spiritual triad and with the third ray. So I'm just going to copy these two, right? And look how little he says about it, about the law of the lower four. Maybe the way to do that is to go up here He doesn't really say much, does he? The Law of Expansive Response and the Law of the Lower Four. So I can put these in some kind of continuous relation, I think. And here goes. The Law of the Lower Four. And this is on page, I think it's EP 2199. both of them are, I think. Or is it page 200? No, it's page, 198, 199, and, okay, 198 and 199. That's what it is. And here is EP2, 198 and 199. So let's just read a little bit about this. We've been told that these laws are connected to when they are active in the life of an incarnated human being, only if he is connected to the discarnate associated groups are these laws really active. So let's get our red bracket here, a little bit big, but okay. We can now with great brevity, however, touch upon the sixth law and the seventh, for we will speak of them together. The other five laws have worked out into definite activity upon the physical plane, and the fourth and fifth laws have to do with the spiritual triad, particularly. Fourth law is an atmic, under atmic inspiration, and the fifth law under Buddhic inspiration. The effect or consequences of the impulse behind them produce the working out of the purpose of the Most High. This is Sanat Kumara, or our planetary logos here. Although eventually the consummation achieved is that of the solar logos, we are told, and can be recognized upon the plane of phenomena, the three lower worlds, and especially the lowest of the worlds. They can all be so recognized, but at this time the conscious awareness of humanity is such that only in the five instances can the effect of these laws be noted, and then only by the most advanced of the world aspirants. So let's say sacrifice, magnetic impulse, service, repulse, and group progress, these, the effects of these laws can be recognized by the advanced world aspirants and by disciples. The disciple and the initiate can dimly begin to recognize the effect of the sixth and seventh laws, but no one else at this time, so we are looking for some dim recognition of the meaning and application of these laws. When it comes to these two laws are not capable of interpretation as above, because only those who are initiated or in preparation for initiation can begin to understand them. You think about service and how it might lead to expansive response. The third and sixth ray are connected there. Sixth ray law of service, third ray expansive response. And he tells us, as I've mentioned, that rays 1 and 2 are specially connected, rays 2 and 4 specially connected, ray 3 and 6 specially connected. You can see the mathematical connection there, but it also that signifies a qualitative connection, doesn't it? The enlightenment, which is the result of initiation, is necessary before one can touch the idea behind these expressions of purpose. The purpose of the solar logos, bringing that purpose into expression, and the glory that occurs when that purpose is fulfilled. We shall not, therefore, take any time dealing with the law of expansive response or with the law of the lower four beyond giving two ancient stanzas which will convey much to the initiate, but may only be sounding words and meaningless symbolic phrases to the average reader or the student. So let's see what he does say and see if any response in thought is forthcoming. The sun in all its glory has arisen and cast its beams athwart the eastern sky. The union of the pairs of opposites produce in the cycles of the time and space, both clouds and mists, these veil a mighty conflagration. Well, we seem to be speaking of the third initiation and of the role of the abstract mind in that initiation. The sun is the sun of initiation. It's also the soul, the rising of the soul on the mountaintop of initiation. The rising of the soul on the mountaintop of initiation has arisen, and of course the Hierophant stands in the east. Is it not so? The Hierophant stands in the east, and it's and from the east the light of initiation comes. The union of the pairs of opposites, and at the third degree the soul and personality are united. At the third degree the soul and personality as opposites are united, and there is quite thorough infusion in the cycles of the time and space, produce in cycles of time and space both cloud and mist. Well, here we will have the overcoming of both time and space in an initial degree. So the glamours and the clouds and the mists have arisen as soul and personality have attempted to come together, because the soul energy will somehow evoke the response from the lower vehicles, in which they throw up all that they have in opposition to the infusing intention, or the intention of infusion from the soul. These veil a mighty conflagration. So there's a fire burning. Is it the solar fire? Is it the is the conflagration occurring when a solar fire attempts to blend with fire by friction? Perhaps, and also electric fire may come into the act now. The flood pours forth. The arc floats free. The flames devour. The three stand free, and then again the mists envelop. When the three stand free, I wonder, you know, I'm thinking of the three aspects of mind, or also the spiritual triad. The ark is interesting because it appears in the Great One. The Blessed One built himself an ark and floated upon the bosom of the waters. Carefully he built. I'll show it to you. I think that would be the... And it's in this as well. Built him an ark. Built himself an... No. Ark. Well, let's just look up ark. There's not that many. The Blessed One built him an ark. Stage by stage he built it and floated upon the bosom of the waters. Deeply he hid himself, and his light was no more seen, only his floating ark. But he's the prisoner within the ark. And the ark are all the vehicles that he has built. He has entombed himself in various vehicles, especially the ark may be the symbol for the causal vehicle. So we'll have to see whether that is true. The ark may be a symbol for the causal vehicle, which the Blessed One has built. The flood pours forth. It's all the energies coming from the higher of the pairs of opposites. The ark floats free. One is free in soul consciousness. The flames devour. They devour what is lower, and later, let's see if it's now, the causal body itself. The three stand free, and then again the mists envelop. So maybe we don't know, are these mists related to the higher worlds, or are we not quite the free and liberated soul yet? Above the clouds, oh, this is amazing. Wow. Above the clouds of earth, a sign shines forth. So we have not yet liberated ourselves from the We have not yet yet liberated ourselves from the three lower worlds. A sign shines forth. Only the eye of vision sees the sign. Presumably here the third eye. Only the heart at peace can hear the thunder of the voice, and this is always, his symbol is the thunder of the words that echoes down the ages. Only, this is a second ray symbol, thunder, the symbol of the second ray, and the symbol of the word. Only the heart at peace can hear the thunder of the voice. So if it is disturbed by all of the internecine warfare of the lower vehicles, we cannot hear the voice of the silence. Voice of the silence. Voice of the silence must be heard. And I think there's an opportunity for abbreviation. VOS, voice of silence. Okay, it's already there. Which issues from the dark depths of the cloud. We're also reminded here of the fifth ray and the cloud upon the mountaintop. Interesting that the mental rays would be left for the last of the laws of the soul. This particular law controlled by the third ray, expansive, you know, in ever-widening circles. And the law of the lower four by the fifth ray. Interesting that those two rays should come last. Only the heart at peace, in that peace, the voice of the silence must be heard, can hear the thunder of the voice, which is the word, the symbol of the second ray, which issues from the dark depths of the cloud upon the mountaintops, veil. This brings us, the associations here take us right to the fifth ray Lord. And, let's see, cloud upon cloud. Okay. Depths of the cloud. No, that's not going to be it. It's Esoteric Psychology 1, of course. Cloud Mountain Top. Cloud Mountain? Let's try that. The cloud upon the mountain top. Okay. And it says, of the fifth ray stanza, you'll recognize it if we go right back here. This will have to be done too, of course. The thunders crash around the mountaintop. Dark clouds conceal the form. The mists, see all these same words, right? The mists arising from the watery sphere serve to distort the wondrous something found within the secret place. So something's hiding behind these clouds. The form is there, its note is sounding forth. And the thunders will crash, I suppose, around the mountaintop. But something is going to be revealed. And a great source of love is imminent. But hid behind this cloud of imminence is love, and on the earth is love, and in the heaven is love. And this, the love which maketh all things new, must stand revealed. So these are similar words, are they not? We're dealing with thunder, we're dealing with a mountain, we're dealing with clouds, or at least we're dealing with clouds and thunder, which issues from the dark depths of the cloud. Something beautiful is hidden within the dark depths of the cloud. Only an underlying understanding of the law, which elevates and lifts, sounds like the law of elevation, can teach the man of fire and son of water to enter into mist. From thence he climbs onto the mountaintop, and there again stands free. So, in other words, we need that interaction. That interaction of fire and water to produce mist which must be penetrated. And the mountain top of illumination must stand free. I'll read this all by itself because I know I'm breaking it up here in a way which maybe is a little disturbing. This triple freedom thus achieved has not to do with earth or water or with fire. Okay, not with the lower worlds. The physical etheric plane, earth or water, astral or with fire, mental. It is a freedom triple in kind which greets the man. It's a triadal, right? Triadal freedom in a way. Which greets the man who passes freely from the sphere of earth into the ocean of the watery sphere and thence on to the burning ground. Triple the call must be, and long it takes to sound it forth, right? Let the disciple sound the call across the desert, over all the seas, and through the fire which separates him from the veiled and hidden door. The third rule for applicants. See, there are these similarities in the language, right? It is mystical language. But mystical language can be very evocative of the intuition. So it is a freedom triple in its kind, which greets the man who has undone the arduous work of passing from the desert, the sphere of earth, into the ocean of the watery sphere, and learned all the phenomena there, and to manage himself there, and thence onto the burning ground of the mind and of sacrifice. Because the mental petals are petals of sacrifice, are they not? The sun augments the fire. I suppose the soul augments the burning. It dissipates the mist, which does pertain to glamour, and dries the earth, and thus the work is done. Well, he's just really not going to say a lot about it, is he? But let me read it. I've given a few little thought tendrils, I call them. They might take root and produce some form. The sun in all its glory has arisen and cast its beams athwart the eastern sky. The union of the pairs of opposites produce in the cycles of the time and space both clouds and mists. These veil a mighty conflagration. The flood pours forth. The arc floats free. The flames devour. The three stand free, and then again the mists envelop. Above the clouds of earth, the sign shines forth. Only the eye of vision sees this sign. Only the heart at peace can hear the thunder of the voice, which issues from the dark depths of the cloud. Only an understanding of the law, which elevates and lifts, can teach the man of fire and son of water to enter into mist. From thence he climbs onto the mountaintop, and there again stands free. The triple fire thus achieved has not to do with earth or water or with fire. It is freedom triple in its kind. It is a freedom triple in its kind which greets the man who passes freely from the sphere of earth into the ocean of the watery sphere, and thence onto the burning ground of sacrifice. The sun augments the fire. It dissipates the mist and dries the earth. And thus the work is done. This is, I think, the fire of mind, and you know how, as we disperse glamours, we tend to use that focused beam of sort of fifth-ray light from the Ajna Center, and using the illumined mind to disperse the glamour. The illumined mind here, I think, is the fire. And the idea of dryness or aridness also is associated with this use of the fifth ray. Of course, this is a third ray rule, and I suppose it we rise above the personal sphere altogether, and you even wonder whether somehow the destruction of the causal body is not indicated here. The sun augments the fire. I think that is the soul augmenting the fire of mind. which then can dissipate the mist, and there is a consummation of realization on the mountain top, and on that mountain top a great abstract realization is had. It may be Buddhi, but it certainly is the abstract mind. So on the mountain top, the abstract mind is liberated at the third degree. One has been working towards it, and then it will be time for the intuition to come into cultivation. Okay, let's see. From thence he climbed. The triple freedom thus achieved has not to do with earth or water or fire. It is a freedom triple in its kind. It seems to constantly reference the triad which greets the man, thence the burning ground of sacrifice. I guess we do not have quite the destruction of the causal body yet, because these laws of the soul, I think, are pretty well operating to the individual who has causal consciousness, but the essential energy may be drawn from an aspect of the spiritual triad, and I think the spiritual triad here is the lowest part, which gives a great response to the plan of deity and a great perspective. It is response to the plan as it can be realized and the purpose, and it's not seen within the individual framework. It is seen as if within the abstract mind, I believe. Sometimes when it says the flames devour, the arc floats free. I mean, one is, in fact, a self-realized soul. One is free in soul consciousness. One is a self-realized soul. The flames devour, but what do they devour? Maybe sometimes we think, you know, let the fire rage, the flames devour, let all the dross be burnt. That's in the mantram of fire, and there are devouring flames before the causal body itself is devoured. The three stand free. One knows oneself in a way to be the soul, and then the mists envelop again. We have not entirely dissipated the lower obstacles, but we have soul consciousness, and we have the eye of vision, we have the third eye, and we have to do some work to entirely clear the personality of all the mists. The word rings forth, the thunder of the word or the voice of the soul. It issues from deep within the cloud, and we, as the man, penetrate into the mist and climb onto the mountaintop of soul perspective. So it sounds like there's a great conflagration. It sounds like in all of this, nothing is achieved immediately, and there is a fight between two fires, solar fire and fire by friction, and it is not resolved all at once. Just when you think all is free, that the arc floats free, the arc, I think, has to be, you know, the casket for the monad, and one realizes oneself to be the soul. A flood of light, of illumination pours in. The flames devour what is found below. The three stand free, but then again, the work is not completed until the end. The mists develop again, or they unfold again, or what does it say of them? They envelop, yes. So we know the world above, and we know what the world below is, and we have not yet cleared the world below. We need the advanced perspective of expansive response to the plan. I think I want to just kind of put that in, expansive response to the plan. Response to the plan and making oneself a true making oneself one who understands the plan and can truly cooperate with it from the perspective of the spiritual triad of the spiritual triad. Until we are free of the three of the soul and begin to understand the perspective of the spiritual triad, we cannot have expansive response. To the divine plan. Anyway, this is one way of looking at it. You know, DK is leaving the interpretation to us, and he's saying, okay, the initiate consciousness is needed really to understand this and live this. We can offer some thoughts. Now, there is also the law of the lower four, and if we thought the last one was going to be difficult, this is going to be more so. But maybe we can understand something when we deal with the symbols. This will take some interpretation, of course. But let's just see. Four sons of God went forth, but only one returned. Four saviors merged themselves in two, and then the two became the one. You know, this sounds a lot like planetary merging, the way of absorption. So are we talking about energies and principles in the human being merging and being absorbed? That's it. That's all he's going to give. Four sons of God went forth. What, on a mission of aspiration, but only one returned. Four saviors merged themselves in two, and then the two became the one. Well, you know, where do we begin? Do we begin from below? Do we begin from above? Well, you know, in a way, it just seems like the monad and this triad, the monad, Atma, Buddhi, Manas, four sons of God, went forth, but only one returned, the prodigal son. Four saviors merged themselves in two, as at the end of any solar system, and then the two became the one. It may be... Well, the one is the monad that remains, that's for sure. Is the monad that remains. The monad and triad went forth and sponsored the prodigal... Oh, that's the wrong one. The prodigal son. Son. The jiva who returned. And in that return, the three synthesizing planets merge into each other. Let's say that Saturn into Uranus and Uranus into Neptune, maybe in this solar system, and Neptune into the monad, leaving but the one. This is a possible interpretation. I'm trying to take the more macrocosmic understanding, or at least the systemic understanding, and apply it to the human being. The law of the lower four, in one way, the lower four have to do with the personality and the far country. But and the prodigal son goes forth into the lower four, or the four sons of God went forth, and they began to sponsor the whole soul journey, and the monad descends in a way into the far country, but only one returned, the jiva. Four saviors, who are the jiva, returns to the triad. is one way of looking at it. I can only say it's one way. The jiva returns to the triad and thence to the monad. Four saviors merge themselves in two, and that's at the end of the whole process. Because let's say that merge themselves in two groupings, perhaps, and then the two became the one. We have to deal with planetary absorption. This is very obscure, very obscure. Let's see what else DK says about it. These two ancient writings, one mystical and the other occult, maybe in that order, convey but little to most minds, and this we can easily see. Therefore, it does not profit us to consider them too carefully. The time is not yet. These are given us how in stimulating comprehension. What does that mean? Let's see, law of the lower four. Oh, I just pressed the wrong one. So, that won't do. Close the program. If you press the wrong one, you're in trouble. So, close the program. All right. So let's go into the Alice Bailey book here, and we'll say the law of the lower four. And there are three of these, and we'll start here. The law of expansive response, the law of the lower four, and that's cosmic fire, and here we go, the law of the lower four. That's all he gives, just a little bit. And we see here that he elaborates a bit, but we'll see what we can determine from this elaboration. Prodigal son. Okay. These two ancient writings, therefore, they are given us. How in stimulating, there's a mistake. They are given us how in stimulating comprehension. Now, in stimulating comprehension, something is wrong. There are typos. Now, perhaps. We stand today on the verge of great things. Humanity is on its way with renewed impetus. Written, remember, in the middle 30s, or late 30s, it stands no longer at the crossroads, but irrevocable decisions have been made, and the race is moving forward along a path which will lead it eventually into light and peace. It will find its way into the peace which passeth understanding, because it will be a peace which is independent of outer conditions. So important. It's like joy. Is independent of outer conditions. Happiness is not, and which is not based upon what present humanity defines as peace. The peace which lies ahead of the race is the peace of serenity and of joy, a serenity based upon spiritual understanding. And the serenity is not an astral condition, but a soul reaction. And that's what the fourth ray type especially has to develop, serenity as a soul reaction. These qualities are not achieved as a result of disciplining the emotional nature, but demonstrate as a natural, automatic realignment. These two qualities of the soul, serenity and joy, are indications that the soul, the ego, and the one who stands alone, is controlling and dominating the personality, which is the result, of course, of the proper living of all these seven laws of the soul, is dominating the personality, circumstance, and all environing conditions in the life of the three worlds. So I'm kind of beginning to wonder why that is put there, but I guess it's kind of a summary of what the laws of the soul are meant to lead to. So very little is discussed in this seventh law of the soul, but it is all about a going forth from 1 to 4 and a returning of the one and a merging of the four to which the one returned until only the one is left. It's almost like the entire story of the soul. Now, if we want to, there's another way we can look at this. If we don't want to look at this in terms of the monad, we can we might be able to look at the personality as the sons of God, and the one that returned might be the mind, which is capable of infusion by the soul. But it's hard to look at the lunar lords as saviors per se. The triadal principles can be saviors, and also the Atman. The Atman, the Atma, the Buddhi, the Manas, these can be saviors. And then there is a merging until only the Atman is left. I like it better in the monad. I like better this. Of course, from another point of view, you know, you have the soul, which is the one, and it's super, and it is in the form of a pyramid. It's the topmost point. Maybe what can return to the soul? It's got to be the mental factor, the lower mind which merges with the higher. And maybe we could say the four lower vehicles in some way went forth, or four evocations appeared, but only the mind returned. And then the two became one. Well, we might have the, is there a merging of the vehicles below? We could also be talking of the chakras as well. I think I'm going to just leave it on the level of the monad. I don't want to try to apply it on too low a level. I think I, for the moment, at my present state of ignorance, it'll have to be monad and triad. With the jiva, they went forth into the lower worlds, but the one who was the monad, who is the jiva, did return. He is the prodigal son. So somehow the monad and the triad sponsored the egoic lotus, or fed the egoic lotus that the solar angels informed. And basically it's always the monad descending into the lower worlds, and the monad returns to that which sent it forth. So we have, you know, the jewel and the lotus. Well, you know, let me look here. Here is the monad, here are the four. They feed and inform the soul, which the solar angel is sustaining. And who is it really that is descending into the lower worlds? It is the fire of the central jewel itself. It is the monad in attenuation, which is really the conscious unit in the lower worlds. So four went forth, but only one returned, because only one really descended into lower worlds and returns. Then this vehicle is destroyed, and the monad rises back into the Atmabuddhi of the triad, and then you have a kind of four. And then the four become the two, and the, well, in this case I would say there is a merging so that only one is left here, which rejoins its original source. There's different ways we can look at this absorption, but I tend to see this as the way of describing the going forth of the one and its return, and its experience through the different aspects. in a way, the monad is reflected in the soul, and the three aspects of the spiritual triad are reflected in the personality. We have four above and four below. The four below are destroyed, leaving us the four above. And finally, we have only the one that sent them all forth. I don't know what we can do with this law except to say that the four rays of attribute become the third ray of attribute. All the lower principles are reabsorbed into the one. The four give us the fourfold field of experience, give us field of experience, through which the one progresses. And we must remain or restore ourselves to soul spirit after experience through the lower four, or through the rays of attribute, rays of aspect and rays of attribute. I just really need to do that. Rays of attribute, Aha, we've got it. If I just keep them. So after experience through the lower four, or through the rays of attribute, the soul must prevail in the realm of the lower four and return to the realm of the higher four, which are monad and its personality, the spiritual triad. Those are the higher four. So it's almost like this law is about the relationship of the one, who is the higher four, to the lower four, and its return from the lower four to the higher four and back to the one. So I'll just put this: from the one to the generation of a higher four, and thence into a lower four, and a return to return of the one, the jiva, to the higher four, and its final return to the one. That is the complete story, in a way. Actually, you've got kind of a nine there, don't you? Or do you have a ten? A nine or a ten. You have the monad and the triad, that's a four. And you have a lower four, that's a four, which is the personality in the three vehicles. You've also got the soul, which is a, makes nine, and you have a jiva, which makes ten. Either nine or ten. It's the story of the unfolding and the return. It looks like it would have to be ruled by the fifth ray. Why that would be, we will have to ponder, I would say. In every other case, the ray rulership seems pretty obvious, but maybe not in this one so much. All right, well, even though found in, maybe we'll learn more through the laws and the symbols when we consider them. The law of expansive response is given here, higher spiritual mind. It comes via the knowledge petals and the subsidiary law of service, so there is no destruction of the egoic lotus, because the knowledge petals are involved. This will be then the end of Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries number 9B, and we are on page 12, just at 1220, I think. Moving along, and beginning of Cosmic Fire webinar commentaries 10A on page 1220. Maybe we didn't expect to go into esoteric psychology and find such abstruse stanzas which call upon all we have of intuition. This last one really requires some deep thinking. All right. That will be it for the moment, and we'll see you soon.